Hello, and welcome to the Steve Barkley Ponders Out Loud podcast. For the last 35 years, I've had the opportunity to learn with educators at all levels, both nationally and internationally. In each of the coming episodes, I'll explore my thoughts and my learning on a variety of topics connected to teaching, learning, and leading. Thanks for listening in. Home learning versus homework. I've asked my colleague here at PLS Third Learning, Don Jacobs, to sit in with me today. I want to share with Don an example I've found at a school in Switzerland that I think is really intriguing, and I'd like to hear your thoughts about it.
Terrific.
Yeah.
Let's get started.
The school is implementing a strategy that they're calling home learning. And it has two critical elements. The first is they want to communicate both to kids and parents that there's a whole lot of learning that goes on outside of school. So if you're in scouting, that's learning. If you're engaged in an extracurricular sports activity, that's learning. If the family takes a walk in the woods, that's learning. And then the second element is that they want to communicate to students that the purpose of taking things from school home to work on is to assist the student in achieving goals that the student has set. So at the end of the school day, and this is a kindergarten, preschool actually, through grade five, at the end of the day, rather than the teachers assigning students' homework, the students consider what they might want to spend time doing at home tonight to assist them in meeting goals that they're currently working on.
Wow. I want to be a student there, and I want to be in Switzerland. So how's it working, Steve? What kind of questions are those kids coming up with for the teachers?
Well, I could tell you initially it wasn't the kids coming up with questions. It was the parents coming up with questions.
I bet that's true.
So it did take several years to reach the level. But the really neat finding at this point is that kids and parents are reporting that students are doing more learning at home than they were when the teachers were sending homework.
That's kind of a radical thought, self-direction, intrinsic motivation.
Well, you're hitting the right words because they connected it to Daniel Pink's work.
Oh, Drive.
In the Drive.
Terrific
yep.
book. Terrific
yep.
book.
And so they actually pulled his three terms from there of autonomy, mastery, and purpose. So the student is recognizing that the autonomy is a choice that I'm making. So when you choose to do that work, it leads to you putting increased energy into it. The reward for the student is that they see a connection between the effort they're putting in and reaching mastery. And then the purpose piece. It's very hard for a student to believe that the teacher could give one homework assignment to the whole class and to think that that assignment was purposeful for me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
So a step when teachers start differentiating homework is to build into the kids that there is a purpose. It's not just work I'm doing. There's a purpose in this work. But this concept of the student picking it, to me, really begins to teach a critical skill set.
So that's Daniel Pink's list. It's autonomy and purpose.
And mastery.
And mastery. I noticed torture's not on that list. Is there a reason for that?
It's funny because I found a quote. I'm going to read this. It's taken from a blog by Heather Shoemaker, and she says this: parents often assume the role of homework patrol cop. Being the chief nag is a nasty, unwanted job. But this role frequently lingers through high school years.
Sure.
Besides the constant conflict, having a homework patrol cop in the house undermines the purported purposes of homework, which was to build responsibility.
Sure, sure. So, Steve, I love the work of Daniel Pink. I love the way you've contextualized this here to this particular example in Switzerland. Can you talk a little bit about how a flipped classroom would relate to this? And we're probably talking about a little bit older kids, perhaps, but I'd love to get your view on that.
Well, the initial term flipped came from students doing at home what they used to do in school and doing in school what they used to do at home. Now there's a connection for me in that in school is where the student got the presentation from the teacher. So it could be the teacher's lecture or the teacher's demonstration. So now the teacher provides that in video, either of the teacher, him or herself doing it, or an outside resource. And the part that's the same for everybody is the part that people went home to do. Mm-hmm. Then when students came back into the classroom, and the students went to work, that did give the flipped classroom does give the teacher the opportunity to differentiate the support or the scaffolding, or maybe even to differentiate the task. You know, if for homework, if I was going to assign 20 math problems to do, if instead you start working on those 20 math problems in class today, I can pick up after 4 or 5 that, Don, there's no reason for you to do the 20. You can now, you know, begin to move on to the next piece. So I have talked with high school people who, when they went to the flipped learning, they did end up providing increased empowerment to kids because some students actually were able to go on to the next lesson because the teacher could tell during their performance in class they didn't need to be doing the rest of this. But equally, a teacher could identify that a student wasn't ready to do the task that I would have assigned for homework.
So this kind of gets back to an earlier blog that you did on optimizing student time and student learning. And that is to what goes where best? What best goes, where if you have a lecture component, how is that done? If there's a independent learning component, how is that done? Where is that best done? So what I'm hearing you say that sometimes that direct instruction that everyone needs to hear at certain juncture, that can be videotaped and put on an iPad and sent home with every kid. The fundamentals, and then the next day come in and practice.
Right on. And let me give you another example. I'm working with a high school that has a flex schedule model. And so their school day is actually laid out as 23 20-minute periods. But now because you have those 20-minute chunks of time, you can teach a class that meets for 100 minutes at one spot in the week and meets at 240-minute spots in another, or, and this part really strikes me as interesting, the class at some point during the week meets with 150 kids in the class.
Wow.
Because that's where we do the lecture once for everybody.
Sure.
That's where we watch the video
together
of the play that we wanted to watch. So now instead of spending 7 minutes, or I'm sorry, rather than spending seven periods showing this video clip to all the kids, 150 or 200 kids watch the video, and now I've got more time broken out working with smaller groups of students. So I think that whole concept of if I'm driven by that students are spending the greatest amount of their time in the most appropriate activity, it means the whole structure of how we look at time and how we look at staff and kids being in boxes on schedules. And that's one of the places that technology hasn't blown up the way we need it to blow it up. So yep. When we take the technology and we stick it into that same fixed structure, we end up in many ways defeating the empowerment that the technology could be bringing to the teacher or to the learner.
Sure, sure. And those are opportunities I'm constantly looking for, good, unforced opportunities to use technology. So you take that example of the film and watching that and downloading it when you want to and projecting it. And I hope there's popcorn in that room for the 150 kids. It's a theater experience. And maybe some after discussion. But likewise, if there's a lecture going on there, and someone in the or someone or everyone has an iPad and they can videotape that lecture and take it home. I, for one, have to hear information several times for the retention. So one of the reasons I love podcasts is I can go back and listen over and over again. I think I'm not that unusual that there are lots of learners like me.
Well, and I've had teachers talk to me about the fact that if students are going to be college and career ready, they need to know how to take notes. But in most college classrooms, nobody's going to question the fact that you pulled out your recorder and recorded the teacher's lecture. Or in many of the schools you're in, the school's set up to record all the lectures and are made available to the students. So that all plays back into that empowerment component.
Well, I think in this case, technologies, that's a natural and terrific use of technologies, that the notion of recording. I think my academic career would have been much more successful had I had those technologies. When I was going through school, I remember being a bad note taker. And even in graduate school, I was not a terrific note taker. A difficult time listening and processing. So I tend to process. I often process with my eyes closed. But I remember a quick story with a colleague of mine who was in my graduate class, and she couldn't attend the class that night. She said, "Don, please take notes for me, and then I'll see her the next day at work." And I did, and I saw her, and I said, "Elaine, I've got notes from last night's class," and I handed her a piece of paper, and I had the word synthesis on it. And she said, "Synthesis?" I said, "Yeah, that's what I got out of it. I mean, this is basically, you know, that's what I sort of put in my head."
So your notes were not much help to her.
No. Not at all. And there was a lot more to be said, and from that good class conversation, that I could have kept for posterity and yep. gone back 100 times and listened to it.
So if we pull this into the thought of what are we doing to empower the learner, so that the learner knows that lots of their learning can be self-directed. A great example that Will Richardson shares in one of the blogs that he wrote, he described a student who became interested in video production, and the student actually became professional, and as a young adult was being paid to take on some major jobs. And he learned everything he needed to learn free of charge. He went online and pulled his initial learning, then produced his videos and posted them. And when he posted his videos, he got feedback on his videos. He took that feedback. And as his skill level went up in his video production, the quality of the feedback he was receiving went up because the level of people who were looking at his video and giving him feedback went up. Yep. And the idea that we could do a much better job in our work as educators to communicate to students that they've got the power to do the learning.
Well, I for one would like to visit that school in Switzerland and really talk to the teachers and talk to the parents and talk to the kids, because that's a big shift in culture and the responsibility we have for our own learning and cultivating that responsibility early on. The idea that a pre-kinder kid could have a conversation, or a kinder, you know, or a fifth grader. I want to do the following,
yeah,
Mr. Barkley.
Yeah. And here's why.
And here's why.
Here's why.
And to be
able to have that conversation with parents.
That's pretty cool.
That here's what I'm spending my time doing and why. And it really hit me when they first shared it with me, because the term we're using here in the States right now is college and career ready. And if you think of that, when you get to college, they don't tell you what your homework is. You got to figure it out.
Yes, indeed.
And if you're career ready, you generally don't have a boss telling you this is work you have to take home tonight or over the weekend.
You got to figure it out.
So maybe grade 5 isn't a bad spot for students to be learning those strategies. Thanks, Don.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks for listening, folks. I'd love to hear what you're pondering. You can find me on Twitter at Steve Barkley, or send me your questions and find my videos and blogs at barkleypd.com.
Take a deeper dive with Steve Barkley in one of his 5 books. Available in electronic and printed formats, add Steve's books to your district's resources or to your personal collection at barkleypd.com/books.